is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
Prosecutors say Anna Kempner sent her last Snapchat message at 8:14 p.m. She was 18 and on a Carnival cruise with her family. She shared a cabin with her younger brother and her 16-year-old stepbrother, Timothy Hudson. Court filings show Hudson allegedly left that cabin at 10:13 p.m. and returned at 11. By the morning of November 7th, 2025, Anna was dead. Her body was found under the bed, wrapped in a blanket and covered with life preservers. And the Miami-Dade Medical Examiner ruled the death a homicide caused by mechanical asphyxiation, which means she was physically kept from breathing. Court filings that have been made public in August 26 show federal prosecutors handed Anna's Snapchat records to Hudson's defense team. The package included a forensic extraction of her account, which means a complete copy of all the data investigators pulled under a search warrant. It also included fresh FBI reports and grand jury materials. All of it sits sealed under a protective order. The Snapchat records anchor the government's timeline. Prosecutors say the account went silent at 8:14 p.m., and reports say ship cameras captured who entered and left the cabin in the hours that followed. Earlier turnovers went further. Court documents obtained by TMZ in April of 26 listed FBI files, Carnival records, the full medical examiner report, body camera video, and phone extractions. Piece by piece, the defense has received nearly the whole federal investigation. So the last words Anna typed to her friends sit now in the hands of lawyers defending the boy accused of killing her. And once before anybody boarded that ship, people say they warned her family about him. The warnings had names attached. What has to happen before ignoring a warning costs the people who ignored it? And that's a fair question. As we go through this, your thoughts, I certainly welcome. Substack, YouTube, wherever you're watching or listening. Anna's family was blended. Her father, Christopher Kempner, is married to Chantel. Follow along, it's the Brady Bunch here. And Chantel's teenage son became Anna's stepbrother. In November of 25, the family sailed together on the Carnival Horizon. So she's put in a room with her now stepbrother. A stepbrother that allegedly had a bit of a history of having some uncomfortable moments with Anna. That allegedly were not taken as seriously as they should have been. Chantel testified in a Brevard County custody case that a travel agent suggested the sleeping arrangement. Blame the travel agent. Oh, the travel agent says, jump off a cliff. I guess you're going to too, right? I mean, go ahead. Why not just put the teenage girl, the 18-year-old, and the 16-year-old boy who's got a thing for her in the same closed-off cabin on a cruise ship? Seems like a great idea. I got news for you, Chantel. The travel agent's going to tell you whatever they need to tell you to make this booking possible at the price that's going to be agreeable to you. That's their job as a salesperson. It's yours as a parent to make educated decisions on where you put your kids to sleep. That's on you, not the travel agent, to see what's appropriate. Because some families, that arrangement might be just fine and dandy. For yours, with a documented history, not probably one of the best choices you've made as a parent. But it was what it was. The three teenagers took the one cabin. The parents stayed across the hall with the younger children. Family members said Anna told them the night before she died that she wasn't feeling well and went back to her room when she missed breakfast the next morning. That's when the search began. Hudson was charged as a juvenile in February 26th and indicted as an adult in April by a federal grand jury on first-degree murder and additional serious federal charges. He pled not guilty, and he remains presumed innocent unless a jury decides otherwise. The case is a federal case because the ship was in international waters when Anna died. Crimes at Sea Against Americans fall to the FBI and federal court in the Carnival Horizon docked at Port Miami on November 8th. That's why a Florida teenager faces a federal indictment instead of a state one. Hudson was first released to an uncle with an ankle monitor. Remember that? Went out and did some landscaping work till the judge reversed that decision in June and ordered him held until trial, which is now set for September. The warnings, though, came first. Stephen Weston is the father of Anna's ex-boyfriend. He told Inside Edition that Hudson was obsessed with Anna and pursued her, even though the two were being raised as step-siblings. Weston also said Anna was scared of Hudson because the boy always carried a large knife. That's her fear, described by a named adult on the record before any charge existed. The creepy boy that you're now supposed to be a stepbrother of wants you, and he carries large knives. Who wants to go on a cruise? And his ex-boyfriend described what he says he saw on a FaceTime call. Anna was lying down asleep and saw Hudson allegedly climbed on top of her. The boy said he reported the incident to Anna's parents. He also said Anna had complained before about feeling uncomfortable around her stepbrother. Anna's aunt said Anna didn't want to go on the cruise at all. And every one of those claims is an allegation. None of them have been tested in court. But the claims went public within weeks of Anna's death, attributed to named people, told to national outlets. None of it took much digging to find. People started raising their hands going, you know, we all saw something, so we're going to say something because it looks like somebody ignored those things. That's how see something, say something works. Somebody along the line has to actually do something. The doing something people, who would that have fallen upon? Her parents. The timeline starts before anyone even packed a bag. Weston says he flagged the fixation and the knife. Anna's ex-boyfriend says the FaceTime incident reached her parents directly, and her aunt's account, Anna herself, resisted the trip. Then the adult signed her to sleep in the cabin with Hudson, with no parent in the room. What could possibly go wrong? Humans are great at ignoring possible calamities until they happen, even when they're screaming at them right in their face. Chantel's testimony says a travel agent recommended it. A travel agent doesn't know what the parents had allegedly been told. Or did you not even accept that as a parent? So I'm going to guess you probably didn't quite register that as a real thing. Just kids will be kids. Don't want to mess up the new marriage with those new pesky facts of your children not getting along or one possibly being a bit of a predator. Then the government filed its papers. Federal prosecutors wrote that Hudson carried out the alleged crimes without any warning against a stepsister he had no conflict with in what they called an apparent supportive family environment. Prosecutors write that language for a reason. It supports their theory that the danger lived inside Hudson and needed no outside trigger, which points the jury towards premeditation. The strategy makes sense inside a courtroom. Outside the courtroom, that language collides with the public record. An adult says he warned the family. Teenager says he told Anna's parents what he watched happen on his own phone screen. The gap between the warnings and the response has a bit of a familiar shape. A warning about a teenager arrives and the adults reach for the innocent explanation. Obsession becomes a crush. A knife becomes a phase. The innocent explanation requires doing nothing. So nothing gets done. And the reflex runs on comfort. Believing a child under your own roof might be dangerous, costs money, marriages, and peace. So parents wait for the behavior to pass and call the waiting patience. A federal court read this file and reached for no innocent explanation. Judge Edwin Torres wrote in a June 10th detention order that the allegations suggest a level of psychopathy and lack of remorse. The order warned Hudson could snap at any time. Torres found that no curfew, monitor, or custodial placement could reasonably protect the community. The same order noted Hudson had no criminal record, had complied with every release condition, and remains presumed innocent. That order says the thing families struggle to say. Some teenagers carry problems that love, time, and patience will not fix on their own. A kid with serious mental health struggles can be treated and managed. None of that happens while the adults insist the problem is a phase. 16 doesn't mean harmless. The system said so in this case, in writing, with Anna already gone. What happened inside the family after Anna died shows how well they understood the concept of risk. People magazine reported that Chantel sent Hudson to live with a relative at a location known only to his parents and law enforcement. The stated purpose per that reporting was removing any risk of danger to the other children in the home, even though the home had other children in it. That filing did the math out loud because the household measured Hudson as a possible danger to children and moved him away from the ones still living there, at least the existing ones from the previous house, never mind these new ones over here. That measuring, even though inaccurate, started after Adam was dead. The custody file holds even more. People reported that Chantel waited 32 hours to tell Hudson's father, Thomas, that Anna had died. Her first message, filed as a court exhibit, asked him to call about an emergency. Hey, by the way, your son might have just murdered my new husband's daughter. Oh, my God. You should have seen the tap dancers on that cruise. Wow, that was amazing. It was great. It just kind of got overshadowed by the whole murder thing. In addition, in another exchange filed in that case, Thomas wrote that Chantel told him she couldn't jeopardize her marriage to help her son. It's a weird thing to say. I do question what the hell's going on in that marriage. And I don't know. I'm not accusing anybody of anything, but that seems like some controlling fucking language right there. Being said by someone who is living in a level of fear or ignorance or both or one or the other. That's some weird language. I can't jeopardize my marriage to help my son. What? That really isn't part of the consideration at this moment in time. I mean, you don't have to help your son if you believe that he did this horrible thing. That's up to you. You can throw him to the wolves. I see no problem with that. But if you're basing your choice not to help your son on the grounds of your marriage, that's weird reasoning. That's prioritized reasoning that's being prioritized out of fear and not out of actual desire or instinctual motive. And it's the opposite of maternal. I seriously question the mothering skills here for the other children that exist in this relationship. Holy shit. That's my conjecture. Not saying they're anything criminal other than just being shitty fucking parents. The two have traded accusations through this custody fight, and none of the messages prove a crime. They show a family sorting out risk, loyalty, and blame only after the worst has actually happened. No prosecutor has charged Anna's parents with anything, and the argument is smaller than a criminal case. When specific warnings reach specific adults and a child ends up dead, we didn't see it coming, deserves some scrutiny instead of just flat out sympathy. Family courts already treat a parent's failure to protect a child from a known outside threat as neglect. The harder question is what happens when the reported threat allegedly sleeps in the next bedroom and the warnings come with names attached? Maybe accountability looks like civil liability. Maybe it looks like child welfare reviews that treat ignored warnings the same way they treat ignored bruises. Whatever form it takes, we didn't know should be a claim adults have to back up with their choices. And the choices in this case are on the record. Anna Kempner was a senior at Temple Christian School in Titusville, Florida. A few months from graduation, reports say she planned to serve in the U.S. Navy. Her obituary said she loved her siblings deeply. Her friends described her as bubbly, loving, thoughtful, and funny. By her aunt's account, she didn't want to take the trip. She boarded with her family on November 2nd anyway, an 18-year-old trusting the adults around her to weigh what they'd allegedly been told. Her last Snapchat message went out at 8:14 p.m., and prosecutors are saying it now sits in an evidence file under a protective order waiting for a jury. Her friends will never get another one. Your thoughts in the comment section. What will be in these Snapchat texts? We're going to learn when this trial starts up, if it starts in September, which maybe it will, maybe it won't. I kind of have my doubts. What's in those texts? We're going to find out the true depth of her fear of her brother. And I think we're going to find out a lot more about who knew what and who pretended there wasn't a problem once this gets underway. Again, that's conjecture. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. Links are in the description. If you've not done so yet, be sure to check out our podcast on the podcast platforms, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeart, you name it. The link is right there if you're watching us on YouTube. Follow it. Take the QR code. Follow it on your device to your favorite podcast player. Press subscribe. You can take us with you in the car, at the gym, your walks, whatever you're doing, waiting for the kids now that school's getting back in session, in the pickup line. Know that. Check it out. We do appreciate that. Then you can take our show with you and stay up to date on true crime anywhere you go. All right. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.